now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Teresa Tucker. Teresa is a very deeply spiritual person, but very far from being religious or in any way conformed to traditional so-called spirituality. She has developed her abilities and her gifts entirely on her own, also in a personal relationship with God and in knowing that her very unique skills do originate from Him, and without Him, they would not be possible. She considers herself an empath and occasionally telepathic, sometimes a mystic, and she also very often has the same experiences with persons who have passed. But she is not a psychic or a prophet, just a very strong and unusually advanced receptor of a person's feelings, emotions, thoughts, and other aspects of their inner self. Being highly tuned and familiar with very powerful spiritual phenomena and experiences of varied forms that reveal them. She is uncommonly feminine, having an ultra-female countenance and personality and extremely womanly attributes, which has greatly enhanced the creation of her astute empathic traits over time, having been built over the decades of her life. Teresa Tucker is also a member of our Cosmic Switchboard team, and this is kind of Teresa's coming out party as far as the Cosmic Switchboard is concerned, and we're just delighted to have her part of the team. You'll be hearing more from her in the form of articles and also podcasts in the future. So without any further ado, Teresa Tucker, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you, James. Thank you so much, and for introducing me to this beautiful site. Thanks to you and Dean, I have knowledge of this wonderful place where people can come and explain anything that they've experienced, no matter what it is, and get answers and share things without the fear of rebuke or judgment. Or anybody's bad expressions. I just simply love the Cosmic Switchboard and all the work you're doing with it, and it's just awesome. So I'm very proud myself to be here and also to be doing my first interview with you. Thank you so much, James.
Thank you. And again, it's a team effort. I mean, I'm kind of out in front because I kind of have the gift for gab, good at conveying certain things, but the Cosmic Switchboard would not have come into being were it not for Kylie, my partner, you know, encouraging me to do this and the behind-the-scenes support she gives me, as well as all the work that Dean and all the work I know you've been doing since you've come on board. So let's get right into it. What was key point of your bio and the introduction was that you are an empath, and those of us that do have some empathic qualities, we know at times it could be a juggling act between being too much of an antenna, soaking up and absorbing too many impressions, too many feelings, too many energies from people, places, or things, you know, throttling it back so we can still function on a day-to-day basis, but utilize our empathic abilities to our greater benefit and to the benefit of those around us. Now, why do you consider yourself just an empath and not a psychic or a prophet?
Well, first of all, I'm very, very humble about my experiences and my gift. I attribute everything that I can do in this regard, able to do, to my maker, to God, if you will, and to a higher power. And I've known for a very long time, it's taken me a very long time in my life to finally understand exactly what I am. But I classify myself as an empath, but not a psychic or a prophet, because I believe that the experiences that I do have fall into that description possibly more than anything. And again, I have a great respect and humility towards these gifts. As I, best that I can describe it is the experiences reveal the inner self of another human being. And that's really what I experience, but I definitely don't have psychic abilities. Once in a while, I will have a personal prophetic experience, but that's not that often, and it's just for me to know something. But other than that, I don't have gifts that a true psychic would have, and I do say that respectfully. I don't assume to be any more than I actually am, but the empathic gifts that I do have knowledge of them throughout my life, being what they are and accepting what they are and not wanting to label myself any more than that. It's all part of being humble towards spiritual experiences and abilities of all different kinds. I tend to disdain, in a sense, anybody who does claim to have a psychic power, who takes it to the level to where they boast about it or they use it for profit or they're disrespectful. I believe in having a very deep respect and attitude of carefulness and regard and always assuming that you could be wrong. You know, you never want to assume, well, you know everything, but assume that you could be wrong and you spiritually seek and understand to know the truth about your experiences. You know, it's unfortunate that some psychics don't have that ability. So I hate to say it, I kind of differentiate myself from them as well.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, being an empath is, yeah, it's a way of life. It's a way of,
yes,
you know,
definitely
connecting with our surroundings and interacting in a certain way with people, places, and things. Now, as far as the experience of someone going through an empathic phenomenon, how would you describe an empathic phenomenon?
Well, I do believe that my experiences are quite developed. It's taken all the decades of my life. It's taken a long time. But empathic phenomenon to me is a spiritual experience of any variety, a spiritual voice, a vision, dream, a manifestation, awareness experiences, a wide variety that reveal the feelings and emotions and the inner experiences and the heart and soul experiences and anything related to that that's inside of another person. It reveals a person's secret inner self, if you will. Empathic phenomenon, they can be very, very strong. They may be the same thing as a prophet or a psychic might have. A lot of people have dreams, for example, sleep visions. Classifying it as an empathic phenomenon, it's revealing another person's emotions and inner self, as opposed to, let's say, telling the future or something like that. And that's what makes it empathic. Occasionally, also, their thoughts, what's going on in a person's mind, is also revealed. What's going on inside another human being is what you're experiencing, and that's how you would you would describe it.
Yes, I've had experiences myself from an empathic point of view. I learned to control it before I, in a sense, was able to put up shields, you know, protect myself. Mm-hmm. I would feel the pain, the emotional anguish, the emotional distress someone was going through, and I would take that on board, mm-hmm. and I would begin to feel, you know, internal disharmony and become dysregulated. So I had to learn over time that just because someone may be sharing a story with me and maybe relating some sort of misfortune, it didn't mean that mm-hmm. I had to, in a sense, sympathetically take on the feelings and the emotional and physical distress in the bargain. I had to learn how to put up my shields, if you will, and still be sympathetic to the person, still be understanding and hold energetic space for the person, but also be able to create a bit of separation, detachment for myself. And I believe that that's something that a lot of people that have this empathic ability, they have to learn over time, because just as people are antennas and they can pick up a lot of signals and a lot of impressions, energetic impressions around them, mm-hmm. they can also be a sponge and pick up all kinds of energies, right. Feelings, illnesses, and all kinds of inner disharmony develop. How do we receive this knowledge of another person? Could you tell us about how that process manifests itself to you, how you feel their emotions, feelings, and inward experiences?
Yes. Well, I do believe that, first of all, the experience is it's very, very common, like you said. An enormous amount of people do have the ability. However, some may have it a heck of a lot more deeper in the sense of the experiences they do have. Spiritual voice, visionary experiences probably differ from empath to empath. Basically, I experience another person's inner self and their feelings and their emotions and occasionally their thoughts through very powerful, vivid, and strong spiritual phenomena, such as manifestations of strength, intense awareness experiences, a variety of spiritual voice experiences, different types of daytime and nighttime visions, spiritual apparitions of different intensities and forms, very powerfully felt physical experiences. I've had numerous experiences where I actually can feel something, exactly like you would feel somebody touching you. And of course, among the most strong are dreams and sleep visions, which I have a lot. Occasionally, I've had out-of-body experiences as well. So I do have very, very powerful phenomena, very powerful phenomena. But what classifies me as an empath is that the phenomenon reveal a person's feelings and emotions, their inner self. And that's what I'm experiencing. Like I said, and not something that a psychic would have, for example, a psychic that can tell the future. I can't do that. I have powerful phenomena, even very, very intense, enormous dreams that are really, really super, super powerful. They reveal another person's inner self. Basically, how I get the knowledge, if you will.
We see this played out in fiction with, the Star Trek Next Generation series, where you have the character, I think she's a counselor, that's her title anyway, and her name is Deanna Troi, and her job with Starfleet is when they're having a parlay or a meeting with this, that, or the other alien or alien delegation, she picks up impressions from them. She instantly tell if they're being deceptive, lying, if there's some kind of subterfuge going on. And I remember reading the books by Lob Sang Rampa many years ago, and he talked about how when there was meetings with the Chinese communists, when they were in the process of trying to take over Tibet and, then eradicate the Tibetan shamans, in these meetings between the officials of the Tibet and the Chinese communists, there would be these Tibetan shamans that would be kind of hiding behind the curtains, and they'd be looking at the auric fields, and they'd be looking and picking up any kind of impressions they can get from the...
Oh, that's something else.
Yeah, from the Chinese. So, I don't know if it's, the same or similar process you're describing, but it just shows that we definitely are antenna. We definitely are sensors. Uh-huh. It's interesting that this whole concept of an empath is much broader than people kind of usually give the term credit for.
A lot of people think, first of all, I'm glad you mentioned Star Trek, because I'm a big Star Trek buff since the 60s when I was a little kid, so I grew up with it. The idea of an empath actually was pretty much perfected in those science fiction shows. They did an enormously good job with that. Counselor Troi, for example, that's exactly how it is. You can have a variety of spiritual experiences, but it's going to reveal, like you said, if somebody's lying, if somebody's angry, if somebody's emotionally fearful, if they're arrogant, whatever. And they go so far as to, she's such an important part of the team because she will be able to tell something that the other people cannot, that the enemy is hiding. And it's an extremely good analogy there. The race that she is Betazoids, and the whole planet are empaths. And I really like that. I always got into that particular part of that series, but just because of that, I can definitely relate. It is interesting, but it does also mean that you kind of have to be tuned to. A lot of people probably have the ability, but they're not aware of it at all. They don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to put it in the perspective of okay, I am reading somebody's thoughts or feelings, even though that person is trying to hide it. It's possible for a person to become more and more tuned over time to where their abilities or their phenomenal experience can develop to a very high level, which is what I think happened to me. I have spiritual phenomenon continuously, all the time, that is very loud, very strong, and it's commonplace for me, you know. So being aware of what it is saying, too, is important.
What are the strongest forms of spiritual phenomenon you have had of another person?
Well, let's see, stronger, much stronger experiences I've had tend to be voice phenomenon. I have very powerful voice phenomenon of all kinds. Visions are very, very strong. They're usually among the most powerful. And the highest of the visionary experience has got to be sleep visions. Once in a while, I'll even have an out-of-body sleep vision, where it's a dream, but you literally leave the body, and it's very, very enormous. There's also a kind of vision where you're half conscious or half awake. And I call this a mental vision, which is like a dream, only you're awake or half awake. It's a certain kind of very powerful vision. There's all sorts of manifestations and things like that. Another form of phenomenon that I'm very, very accustomed to is a literal physically felt experience, where it's like the person can touch me. They might be many, many miles away from me, but they're being empathically experienced, and I can feel a touch or an outreach of some kind physically. And it's literally like feeling an actual physical person there. It's a very, very powerful, powerful experience. I also have a lot of like manifestations. I describe them as being just extremely overwhelming, powerful awarenesses that can almost put you into a trance type of thing. And, it's like a deluge. And then there's another experience of just being super, super close to somebody. And you just experience all of their emotions, their feelings, in a constant wave. Again, these are among the more overwhelming experiences.
You were mentioning the voice aspect to it, mm-hmm. and how you can hear, I guess, impressions in the form of voices and thoughts of other people.
Yes.
Could you describe, paint a word picture of what that sensation is like? And, what parts of your being it seems to affect.
Right. Well, a spiritual voice experience, as I call it, I've known for quite a long time in my life. And it's a voice experience, and it's like a loud, booming resonance inside in your spirit, which literally you hear a voice, and you hear a speaking. And there's a wide variety of these, but I have some of them where they just constantly repeat the same words over and over again from somebody. It's very powerful, can get very loud. Sometimes it happens while asleep, but it can happen all throughout the day. It's not like you would hear somebody talking in your ear. And it is hard to describe, but it's people say, well, you hear a voice in your head or in your ear. That's not what it's like at all. It's a voice that you hear in your spirit inside. And it is pretty loud. It's sometimes, especially angry ones, when I have to deal with somebody's anger and they're spilling it all out in these spiritual voice experiences, it can get so intense. I just want to collapse. It's enormous. The anger experiences I don't like at all. I I'm very sensitive to anger, and I would rather not go through that. However, it is a person's emotions, so you are going to experience it. All in all, the spiritual voice is usually very, very powerful, and you hear it inside of you.
When you feel it, there's like an instantaneous knowingness, like, and I've talked about this before, like my experiences with certain animals, but with certain types of dogs and dogs that I've been closely connected to. What I feel is like an impression, a wave, if you will, an energetic impression. Mm-hmm. And for me, the way I perceive it, the way my senses decipher it, if you will, is I get this like a burst transmission. And it's not like a phrase or a word, usually. What it is like you mentioned, in your spirit, there's an inner knowingness of what this animal is, other life form is trying to convey to you, right? Where it just looks at you a certain way, and you know what it's trying to say. It's nothing like it's as simple as, oh, let me out, I gotta use a toilet. It's like, it's something usually more complex than that. It's a multi-tiered thought form that conveys its feelings, its intentions, joy, happiness, sense of urgency, whatever the case may be. You feel it in a certain vibe. And so, yes, this is what I feel from people as well. And it's unspoken. A lot of people that are experts at speeches and public speaking, etc., they talk about how most of our communication is nonverbal. But I think what they're leaving off the platter is this energetic impression aspect that we've been talking about.
Yeah, I think I word it wrong. I call them manifestations. I know what you're talking about. In my case, they tend to be a wave, and they last a very long time, and they're very, very overpowering. It's like a huge deluge, and it sweeps me up, and very often I will become weakened by it and tranced by it. But a spiritual voice may be one of those too. It's just that it's being brought out in a voice form. I don't think everybody has the ability. Some people do, some people don't. But those that do can have it. In my case, it's quite well developed because they happen constantly. So, that's very, very interesting, especially that you say that you've had it with animals. You never know, they could be trying to tell us a whole lot more than we realize, and they want to talk, but they can't. So,
yes, and what I've noticed also with animals is they will make an effort to talk with certain people. It's almost like, you know, in the same way that spirits, if you will instantly identify someone that has a mediumistic second sight type gift. They'll like point out, okay, that one, let's go over there and give them a message, or I'm not getting the message across to this person, you know, whether the person just blocked off or whatever the case may be. But with this other person, I think I have a shot. I'm going to go over there and talk to them. And there must be something about that individual's auric field, the vibe, the energy that they resonate that gives these animals, in our example, that understanding. Now, you mentioned also earlier that you believe, and I believe this also, that our dream life can be more than just simply like an effusion of the subconscious, all these unconnected, juxtaposed images just sweeping our mind as we sleep, kind of a way for, you know, our subconscious to empty out the cache in computer terms, that at times for certain people, I felt that some people have a means to have visionary experiences in their dream state, and and they can go dimension hopping even, depending on the nature of their energy body in their auric field. Now, in one of our private communications, you mentioned recurring dreams, quote unquote, you have of these marvelous edifices, these marvelous like buildings and structures, and could you describe that and what you see and what you feel and what you feel it means?
Mm-hmm. Well, my dreams almost always have the structures, man-made structures, particularly buildings, and then there's people in the dreams as well. And, you know, usually I have a dream about somebody. Namely, if we get along here later, I will talk about more about having a connection with one single person for a long, long time. And I have empathic experiences of that person constantly. I will also occasionally have, very often have dreams about the person. And they will always appear in the dreams, or they will be present. But I always have enormous structure complexities. It's absolutely incredible. It's out of this world. I will always see a building in the dream. And it's not just just seeing like a house or a barn or a road. It's tremendously elaborate. There's details in it that are just unreal, like a Victorian house or a palace or a warehouse, office buildings, skyscrapers. I mean, it's just vast. I've seen virtually every building in my dream that I can imagine. And what really astounds me is that every dream has them. I mean, I have dreams almost every night. Every single dream has a structure. And it's just not an ordinary thing. It's really super complex. Obviously, there's meaning to it. Without question, there's a purpose and a meaning behind it. Some of the structures have been just outrageously out of this world. I've seen like complex malls, pavement structures, concrete structures that just go on and on and on. All kinds of different business type buildings and houses of every sort you can imagine. Everything from something super old to modern. You know, mansions and things, and it's so hard to describe them. Assuming that there is some very deep, profound meaning to all of this, I don't really understand it. That's the nature of my dreams.
I bring it up because, once again, and I haven't really delved into this myself, I really haven't spent a lot of time investigating it, but there is a region or regions in China where every now and then, and apparently it's happened like 4 times over the last few years, in a certain part of China or certain parts of China, the people will look up and they will see there amidst the clouds or in the sky what seems to be a floating city. These huge edifices of like, you know, big stone or construct of a similar material of these large buildings, right? And the wow. way the spin meisters put it out, they use the old psychological swamp gas theory mindset. They try to explain it away. It's kind of a variation of the old temperature inversion explanation when they try to explain away UFO reports, either visually sighted or on radar. They try to say that there's some kind of weather anomaly, something reflecting off the ground that's causing this anomaly to appear in the air. But it's just nonsense because what's being videotaped are clearly like artificial constructs, even though they may be using like perhaps stone or you know, some kind of earthly, if you will, from this or some other dimension material. Clearly, it's artificial, because if it's a natural phenomenon, as they say, it wouldn't have all this structure. It wouldn't have all this,
of course,
you know, artificial design type shape. And so I'm just wondering if at some level, the dreams you've been having of all these structures, and somehow people are seeing there in China this huge building complex that's showing up in the sky, if there's any kind of a connection. I was wondering what your thoughts on that would be.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting that more than one person is seeing that vision. I'm sure that there are examples somewhere where people have actually looked into the sky and seen such visionary things. But yeah, I can't be sure of that, but I've had numerous dreams where I have experienced being in a structure that is also in the sky.
Mm.
I mean, I've had every wild building, structure, and edifice edifice experience that you can possibly imagine in dreams. I've seen it all. And, you know, anything that anybody could possibly imagine, I have seen in the way of a building in a dream. It just covers the whole entire universe of buildings, you know, which is, it's something else. But yes, I find it quite fascinating that more than one person would look up and see that. And that's proof that there's something to it. It's not
There's something going on, whether it's something being deliberately done to create mass hysteria, to psyop, or whatever. But the fact that they would come up with such a nonsensical explanation tells me that, you know, they'd rather just sweep the whole thing under the rug and move on. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that I've experienced in some of my dreams, Teresa, is I don't know if it means perhaps on these particular types of dreams I'm stuck in a lower astral dimension, or it's more of a stage-managed dream where someone or something pulls me into a dream environment that is familiar to me. Because I know that a lot of times, whether it's in a Jungian archetypal sense, or whether it's externally stage managed, externally created, typically we find ourselves at times in the dream state in places that are familiar to us. Like for me, a lot of times I'll find myself in my parents' house in San Jose, California. They've long since moved away from there, but I'll find myself in dreams where I'm in my parents' house, especially as it relates to ET kind of UFO themes, or I'll be given a message or an impression that the place I'm in a given dream is my parents' house in San Jose, even though it may not look anything like it. And another very frequent archetypal setting, and again, whether these are contrived, externally generated, whatever the case may be, or something I, at some level, help to co-create, I find myself at times in what looks like a lobby, like a hotel lobby, and I get the impression of something going on there. There's a meeting taking place. There's people there. It's kind of a transit point, people coming and going, and there's a sense of, like, almost a mission where people are getting tasked to do certain things, and in ones and twos and small groups, people are coming and going, right? And this is a recurring theme with me. And, you know, there's a lot of metaphors that could be read into that, a hotel, you know, a transitory place. And I have had these dreams where these edifices and these types of building constructs play a key role.
Yeah, it obviously means something. And I know that I'm certainly not the only person that sees buildings and dreams. Although I may see more complex ones, who knows? I still don't understand it. It's quite beyond me. Now, how it relates to the empathic revelations of another person is also a mystery. The person or persons will also appear in the dreams and will, you know, I will experience their huge wave of emotions or what they want to say, and a lot of other things they want to reveal. How that reveal relates to the building aspect of the dreams, that's still a big mystery to me. I still don't understand that. It's quite phenomenal. I've concluded that there must be something behind that, and not just, like you say, you fall asleep and you have all these random things go through your head when you fall asleep, as scientists believe. I think there's a heck of a lot more going on than that, obviously.
When you're in your empathic mode and your sensitive, intuitive empathic mode, what kinds of emotions do you commonly encounter in other people, and how do you perceive them, and what are the worst emotions to deal with?
Mm-hmm. Well, all forms and types of emotions are revealed. Anything that a person can inwardly have, everything and anything from the good to the bad, feelings of love. I will know when somebody, for example, has feelings of love towards me or towards anyone else, hatred, passion, fear, anger and desire, everything that can possibly be inside somebody. I embrace and appreciate the good emotions. I, love and feelings of ardor. I embrace those and want to know them, and I have deep respect for them. And sometimes even I myself can return the emotions to that person. Emotions of love and similar feelings are especially powerful, and they take over in spiritual phenomena very strongly. And they're among the strongest and most intense. But the worst emotions for me, what I call adverse emotions, and they get very, very overwhelming, sometimes too much, and sometimes even downright torturous, difficult to endure, are anger, inner rage, forms of ill feelings such as thoughts of revenge. My most difficult and hard to endure emotion is arrogance, pride.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. When somebody has arrogance, it's almost like that's something that I want to like run a million miles away from. And I don't want to deal with it. And it's extremely, extremely difficult. Anger ranks the second, and that's very, very hard too.
Yeah, what I found with arrogance is it almost is a conduit, arrogance, into a darker, denser, nether dimension, because it is a feeling that is generated from within and without an individual, of presumptuousness, of knowing better than anyone else, of being superior to anyone else. And these are inherently inhuman, non-human traits, because when someone is balanced and someone has a connection to organic source, that kind of air of superiority, that kind of presumptuousness just does not exist. And so when I encounter somebody with this presumptive arrogance, like they just automatically know better than you and they're just automatically superior to you, energetically, I feel it momentarily because I'll put my shields up, but feel it as a form of energetic body odor is the only way that I could describe it. It's just something that I just want to clear it from my energy field. I want nothing to do with a person. I just put my shields out as far as I can and detach from that person, because they're coming from a very low, dense, energetic place, and I don't want anything to do with that.
And it's quite evil, too.
That's quite evil. It is. Because the narcissism, which breeds all of that, itself comes from a very dark, energetic place. And yeah, and there's so much of that. Our society, this entertainment culture, fosters and encourages this narcissistic, selfish mindset within society.
Right, and if you think about it, it's entirely foolish, because a person thinking way highly more of themselves just because they are a mere artist or they do something in their life, a profession that people worship, then they go into this mindset, yeah, I'm God, I'm better than you, you're too low. And then, you know, of course, everything that describes the word conceited and proud is just totally ridiculous. It's unnecessary. It's artists, musicians, and actors and actresses are just people doing a job of art. They're not kings or queens. They're not royalty. They're, you know, you have to wonder, why in the world are they on these pedestals? The arrogance, some people in the ordinary world have it too. They have such an arrogance that it is truly bad. It's in my opinion, it's even worse than anger. Anger, you can understand to a great extent. People get hurt. They don't know how to defend themselves. And it's very, very nice if you can control your anger. But arrogance, there doesn't seem to be any excuse for it. It really doesn't.
Yeah, it's just a low, dense, energetic vibe, and it just allows all these negative entities to piggyback onto it. And sad that in this matrix system, that the system glorifies that. You know, I mean, that's how someone like Ayn Rand, you know, a writer, can become so popular, because she promotes selfishness. She promotes a disinterest and a callous disregard for others, and somehow the system promotes her as being like some kind of visionary and a great philosopher and someone to be esteemed and emulated. So that, and then we see this also in these reality shows where all the low impulsive traits of boorishness and selfishness are glorified. Now, as far as your empathic experiences are concerned, what have been some of your most unique and extraordinary empathic experiences that you've had?
Well, I think that the very, very strong ones, and there's a variety of them that have great strength and enormity, and they're very intense, ones that have been extremely surreal, very massively profound, rapturous. It's hard to describe them sometimes, but I would think that the ones that are most powerful tend to trance me out. They just too huge. I think the most powerful would be the dream experiences, sleep visions. I call them sleep visions because they're actually just, it's a visionary experience when you fall asleep. Occasionally do enter the out-of-body type of experience, sessions of mental visions too, during a half conscious state, which is sort of like a dream, only you're kind of like half awake. I describe the physically felt experiences. It's like feeling somebody, exactly like if somebody reached out and touched your arm or your leg or any part of you, you can actually feel it. I've had that kind of phenomenon. Daytime visions can be very, very powerful too. Of course, the spiritual voice can be extremely loud.
Could you give us an example of what a daytime experience is?
Yeah, a daytime experience differs from the night, when you go to bed and you're able to rest. During the day, the visions tend to be more spiritual. Not so much in the mental realm as what a dream would be, but they can be just as powerful. It's a vision. A spiritual vision, I guess, is just your basic vision, and you can see, an apparition, a picture of somebody. Okay, and in my case, they're always displaying some emotional expression. In my case, too, daytime visions are constant. They're always there. They never go away. I never have a break from being an empath, if you will. And the voice experience is always accompanying them. And then there's the waves of emotions that will flow. The impression that you were talking about kind of describes that. Differs from the nighttime, at least in my case, because I don't have a very strong brain. I always know myself to have a small brain and a big heart. When I fall asleep, I can get massively overwhelmed by a dream. And then I can wake up and have the half-awake experiences, very, very powerful visions, sort of like the daytime ones, only they enter more into the dream state. So there is a difference. It's just maybe the part of the body that experiences them. Daytime, of course, you are awake. They're not as powerful as the dreams and mental visions during the night, but they can be pretty huge. I've even had them like while at work, going on and on and on, and they can be extremely powerful.
You mean while you're, by all outward appearances, fully conscious, but you're having?
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's different. It's hard to describe a spiritual vision versus a nighttime vision where you shut down, where a dream or a mental vision, as I call it, occurs within the mind realm, and it all just takes over you. Well, of course, your body is shut down. When you're conscious and awake, it almost transfers back into your spiritual ability, which the best way I can describe it is it's almost like a holographic image. A vision is like a holographic image where you see, in my case, it would be a person. You see that person. But when you're asleep, of course, it takes over your whole being. So I know I'm probably not using the right words to describe all these things.
No, you're doing fine, and I'm sure that it varies from individuals.
And all that, you know. But it's quite hard to describe, and unless you've actually experienced it, you really won't know it. Yes, oh yeah, fully conscious, the whole works. And then they get more powerful when you become half conscious or unconscious in the case of sleeping.
In my case, and I guess it's a case by case thing, and you know, some people may fall into a particular pattern, but the daytime visions, if you will, that I've had, where it would be like I'm sitting here and I don't really have anything particularly in mind. It's like for a moment, I'm kind of a blank slate, right? And then at that moment, call it spirit or a download or whatever the case may be, suddenly I become this conduit and like stuff starts coming in, right? And and what's interesting, if some of them can be so intense that I become a part of whatever it is I'm seeing. It suddenly, it's not like it's something that I'm outwardly projecting or looking into, as it were, from a distance or separate from. It's like this feeling will come over me, and it seems to engage a certain part of my being, a certain part of my brain. It engenders an entirely different feeling out of the norm. And then suddenly, I'm there, wherever there is, whatever vision, whatever mystical place that I happen to be looking into, a part of my consciousness is projected out to that place. It could be something as relatively innocuous as like a field of wheat or grain or you know, kind of a forest, kind of a brook, river setting or something along those lines. But for whatever reason, spirit, if you want to call it that, is somehow projected out for whatever reason, or conversely, I'll have an image come through of people, places, or things, some kind of activity, but there's some kind of multi-tiered level of meaning associated to what I'm seeing. And again, it's associated with particular bodily sensations, particular feelings in my head, in my actual physical head and brain, and it manifests as kind of an energetic feeling throughout my whole body. And the times when I've tried to engage my left hemisphere logical side, like, okay, what is it that I'm looking at, right? And then suddenly the whole thing just stops right in its tracks and it's over with. It's something that seems to become disengaged when I engage the logical left hemisphere of my brain. When I just let it happen and do my darndest to, in a sense, not even pay attention to it, which is also hard to explain. In other words, just let it flow and let it happen. That's when the vision, the waking vision, takes hold. If for a split second, if I try to divine some kind of meaning or understanding from it, which engages my left brain, it just stops it in its tracks, and the feeling stops, the energy stops, and I berate myself afterwards because I know that it's a vision, and I'm interfering it with the Mr. Spock side of my brain.
Yeah, it could be that you may have a very strong brain, James. I have discovered over time, and I'm going to get a lot of tomatoes thrown at me for this, from the womanly sector, but men do have much stronger brains. Most of my long, long length empathic unions, if you will, have been with men, and I've discovered that their mental strength is very, very strong. as opposed to the kind of mind I have. I have more of a heart realm, and women tend to have bigger hearts. Men have bigger brains. That's just the way we're made. But it could be that that's the strength of your mind kind of interfering. Whereas in my case, no, it's true.
Yeah, I agree with you.
In my case, they constantly happen, and there's nothing I can do about them. Not that I'm complaining, but if I try to shut down a vision, it just doesn't work. I cannot shut down the spiritual voice for all the life of me. If I try, it just doesn't work. I cannot stop. But they are very, very powerful experiences. Yet some people may have the ability to tune them out or to disengage, but I just simply don't have that.
Yeah, and it's also important for people, and I've said this many times, but it bears repeating, that we can't compare ourselves to others. Like, I used to rue the fact that, oh, why can't I have the same psychic abilities or similar psychic abilities of this, that, or the other person? And what I did in the process by, you know, feeling that way, I downgraded and I relegated my own empathic abilities, my own intuitive abilities, to a secondary or lower level. I just had to learn how I process these downloads. I just had to learn how spirit communicates with me. And like, whereas some people need to, and there's nothing wrong with this process, some people need to get more into a quieter space, or even a meditative space, trance-like space. I found that even when I'm in the midst of a conversation, things come through me, information and from out of the ether, as it were, that I don't consciously, logically know the source of. I wouldn't be able to tell you where I learned or had that level of understanding, or was able to divine that meaning. I couldn't point to a certain book or something. It's just something that comes through me, even in the midst of a conversation or a discussion. Wow. So I've had to learn that that's one of the ways I process information. And so it's important to the listeners out there, never fall into the trap of comparing yourself to others, because we all process differently. We all have varying, ranges and frequencies as far as our internal sensors and antenna are concerned. We're almost at the end of the first half here, Teresa. We're going to get into much more of this in the second half. Take us to the end of the first half. Are there any kind of empathic experiences everybody, or does the empathic experiences with you occur usually with certain types of individuals?
If you're just meaning that I would just have experiences of just everybody and anybody around me all of a sudden, or yes, just select individuals, that is an enormously good question and probably defines me more of a kind of a unique empath. Definitely, without question, it's select individuals. I could be, for example, walking through a crowd of strangers and not have a single empathic experience of anybody around me. And yet be severely overwhelmed by the phenomenon of some specific person far away from me for days on end, even for weeks, months, even years. I have had what I call connections with one single person for a very long length of time, and I will have constant experiences of that person continuously, day and night, without stopping. But for the most part, the distinct individual consume most of my experiences in an endless fashion. And it's almost like they reign over my soul, communicating with me their feelings and their emotions and everything like that. Now, I have had occasional experiences, too, of people once in a while, of one single individual from time to time. And that does happen, too. And I've also had experience of past persons, experiences with spirits, people who have passed, same kind of empathic experiences. So, yes, definitely select people, though, definitely.
That is interesting, because some people, it's the opposite. They walk through a crowd. A friend of mine was telling me that, You know, she'd walk through the mall and, oh, my goodness, this person beats his children. This person is cheating on his wife. And she would walk into places. She used to do a lot of work with law enforcement as a psychic. And, you know, she would walk into a place that where a murder had taken place. And just the images and the feelings and everything would just overwhelm her. It would be an onslaught upon her senses. And she'd have to step out of the room and, you know, all that stuff. So, anyhow, we reached the end of the first segment of what's been a very fascinating discussion, Teresa. And if our listeners want to get a hold of you, if they want to contact you, how would they do so?
I do have an email address if they'd like to contact me there. I guess they can also, I don't know if they can leave a message on the Cosmic Switchboard.
Yeah, absolutely, if they address it to you, definitely.
Yeah, they can do that, but I can also provide my email address. I don't mind doing that. I give it to you?
Oh, yeah. Well, what we can do is we can just put it on the website as well as our dedicated YouTube channel, and people will be able to, you know, contact you if they have any questions or if they have wanted to, you know, share any information with you. Well, we've reached the end of the first hour, and for those of you listening, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour with our guest, Teresa Tucker, and we'll be right back.
All right. Thank you, James.
Thank you.